The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1102. It's Tuesday, the 26th of June, 2018. By the way, have you yet downloaded the app, the new Vox Markets app? I say new, it's relatively speaking, but it's always having updates. But go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app, APP that is, of course. Download it for free and search for a company. Hit the follow button on that company's page and you will receive any significant news that company releases within seconds to the front screen of your smart device. All right, so it's voxmarkets.co.uk/app, and there's more features on there than that. That's the basic first feature you can do, and like I said, it's absolutely free. You can set up multiple watch lists, which I have. I have, for example, my own stocks, and then I have small caps I'm watching. I have some big caps and others of interest. So I've got four watch lists, I think, if I count correctly. But it's all free. So voxmarkets.co.uk/app. What have you got to lose? It won't cost you a penny. Okay, on today's podcast, Gil Holzman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, ECO is ticker there, and Gil discusses their one-year extension to its offshore Tamar block in north-central Namibia and progress on their Aridinuik block in offshore Guyana. Plus, I have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about Petrofac, that's PFC, Andalas Energy, ADL. It wouldn't be Alan without Andalas Energy, let's be honest. Speedy Hire, SDY, and Apollo Minerals, which is listed abroad, and TSX, I think it is, but maybe coming over here very soon. Okay, I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gil Holzman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. ECO is the ticker there. Gil, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Justin. Good morning from a very sunny and nice day in London.
Yeah, it is nice, isn't it? But I do feel I've recently said on social media, I think it's melting the markets a bit. The markets are feeling a bit hard work, you know? It's almost like melting the tar on the road and just trying to walk on a melting road. That's how much hard work it is, the markets at the moment. But anyway, I mean...
I wouldn't consider it melting. Yeah, it's a bit fatigue.
Yeah, it's fatigue, yeah, it's just we're not used to this hot weather. It's wearing us down a bit. It's tiring us out. But, Gil, you've been very busy since we last spoke, and we'll go into some of the updates in a bit. Before we do, for people listening right now who are not familiar with the company, Gil, give a brief summary explaining what Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas is all about, please.
Eco Atlantic is an oil and gas exploration company. For those of our audience that do not know us yet, we are operating five blocks in two regions at the moment, offshore Namibia and offshore Guyana. Both regions are very prospective for oil, and we have very big partners to partner with us on these blocks, Azinam, Talo, Total as an option. We have managed to secure these blocks since 2011 and managed to farm them down to these big companies, and we are now gradually getting into a stage where these blocks, at least two of them, one in Namibia and one in Guyana, are going to be drilled in the coming few months, let's say in the next 12 months.
Yes, and they're sort of high impact and a potential massive prospective resources. Have you got any figures around these resources, Gil?
Both areas have been the focal point of interest from the entire industry, both Namibia and Guyana. In because of the huge past 2 years ExxonMobil discoveries that amount today to more than 3.7 billion barrels on their block alone. On our block, we are yet to publish a CPR in the next couple of weeks. So I don't want to actually name numbers, but at the moment, based on the 2D that we managed to interpret and analyze 2 years ago, we look at over 1 billion barrel worth of leads, but that number has the potential to significantly go higher after we complete our 3D interpretation, which is again quite it's coming and it's near completion. In Namibia, we quoted the net to ECHO more than 2 billion barrels on all over our four blocks. Three blocks are in a very advanced stage, and one block was the subject of the recent extension that was granted by the minister 2 days ago.
Okay, well, let's go over some recent news. And the most recent bit of news was that you've been granted an extension at the Tema block offshore Namibia. Take us through the detail of this, if you could.
Yes, this is mainly an administrative kind of process. Namibia is getting very interesting for big companies and oil and gas explorers. With two wildcat exploration wells planned for this September and October. With the recent entry into the country by Exxon and by Total, Shell is already operating there for the past 2 years. So Namibia is coming back again on the radar of many E&P companies, majors and independents alike. And we just wanted to make sure that we are in a good shape on all our blocks to capture all these opportunities. The Tamar block was basically, it's an inheritance from a company that we bought 3 years ago by the name of Pan African Oil, and this block is the least advanced of all four of our blocks. The other blocks are in a much more advanced state after 3D, and basically two of them are drill ready in partnership with Azinam, in partnership with Talo. And we wanted to make sure that the Damar block will be in the same kind of status on our portfolio, because we see more and more interest from industry players to come into the region, to come into the Tamar block specifically, because it's adjacent directly to the west from Prospect S of Chariot and Azinam, which about to be drilled this coming October. So we're going to see two wells being drilled in Namibia after a halt of 4 years. In the past 4 years, there was no well being drilled in Namibia. And now we're going to see coming September and October at least two wells that are going to be drilled. And naturally, the eyes of the entire industry are looking at Namibia. So we wanted to make sure that we are in a good shape towards this increased activity. And we managed to secure a one-year extension to our Tamar block, which is now becoming more and more interesting for potential partners.
Yeah, and talking about sort of drilling action going on close to your acreage, that's also happening in Guyana, and you know, ExxonMobil 8th discovery. Take us through the detail there, if you could.
Exxon announced an 8th discovery in Guyana on the Stabroek block last Friday, and this is a big discovery, 278 feet of net pay, and they estimate more than 500 million barrels, half a billion barrels on this discovery alone, the long tail discovery. It's getting closer and closer to our block, to the Rindwijk block. We're talking about a few kilometers away. They are down deep from us, we are up deep from them. Same formation, same kind of a play. And again, all the strings of their discoveries are just, you know, very few kilometers from the border of our block, on the same kind of channel slope that we are looking at. So every discovery of Exxon in Guyana means a great deal to us, especially to us, because we are so close to their block. Exxon discovered more than 3.7 billion barrels in the past 2 years in Guyana, in the same block, right adjacent to ours. And as a result of that, we, together with our partner Talo, decided to enhance our work program, and we already completed, as you know, a very big, very large 3D seismic survey last September in 2017, and we are nearing completion of the interpretation. The last pieces of data are being delivered to us by PGS. We are extensively working, our team with the Talo team, to interpret the results. You know, I can only tell you that our team is very encouraged with what we see there. The Talo team is very encouraged with what we see there. We will probably be in a position to finalize the interpretation in the next, I would say, 2 to 4 weeks. Again, I don't want to name exact dates, but it's getting closer and closer to completion, and the last batches of data are being delivered as we speak right now to us, to Talo, and in parallel to our option farming partner Total. So I think that we are in a very good position to, first of all, to publish a volumetric CPR based on the 3D that we have at the moment in the next, I would say, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, by the end of July probably. And we also going to deliver the last batch of data to Total that contractually will start the 120 days clock ticking for Total to exercise the farming option. However, I must tell you that Total are very engaged with us since January already, and they are a part, and they take an active part in the team that is doing the actual interpretation, because every batch of data that we get, we transfer it to them immediately. So basically, whereas contractually they have 120 days after the deliverance of the last batch of data in the next coming weeks, in reality, they're already very much in the process of interpreting together with us and Talo the 3D results, and I have a good reason to believe that they really like what they see.
Yeah, absolutely. And going forward, after you've interpreted these, and like I said, it's very hard to put a firm date on this. But once you have, and you're confident in your interpretation of these results, what's the next sort of milestone, next bit of news after that?
So as I said, once we complete our own interpretation together with Talo as the current formal block partners, we will be in a position to issue a volumetric CPR. And I have good reason to believe it will be with healthy numbers. This is coming in the next few weeks, probably 4 to 6 weeks maximum. Mm-hmm. The guys that are doing the CPR are already actively looking at the data and doing their own interpretation. It's Gustafson and Associates from Boulder, Colorado. This is one thing. The second thing will be the deliverance of the last batch of data to Total. We are expecting to get this to our hands in the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks, by the middle of July. And with the final report expected end of July. So this is yet another piece of news. But as I said, we are already working in parallel with Total and with Talo interpreting the data. So it's not going to be the first time they're going to see the data. It's going to be just the last batch contractually. So they have a pretty good idea what we have there and how much they like the interpretation. And the next thing to do is basically to take the drilling decision, or to identify the target for drilling. For that, we, and as announced 2 days ago, for that, a few days ago, for that we already agreed with Talo, our partner, the operator, to start the drilling engineering process. It was only expected to begin in November, but we decided we're going to start doing it immediately. So we started the drilling engineering process on the one hand, and we already applied for the environmental clearance for drilling from the government of Guyana. So basically, everything is coming into place. We are gearing up for the next stage, which is accepting Total, hopefully, as a partner, and I think it's coming in the next few months. And then the three partners, Talo, Total, and Eco Atlantic, will be drill ready. And it's only a matter of lead time for an engineering of the wells, and to identify the exact few targets that we already see based on the 3D, to prioritize them, to see what is the chance of success on each target, and to go ahead and drill few wells in 2018.
Marvelous stuff. Okay. Gil, well, listen, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
That's easy. We have a great exposure to what's going on in Namibia in the next, imminently. 1st of September, you're going to see Talo spudding the first wildcat exploration well on the block adjacent to ours. And then following which, you will see the Chariot well on Prospect S, again, in a block which is adjacent to two of our blocks. This will be two free looks for us. We're not participating in those wells, naturally. It's not our block. But we will gain a lot of information and a lot of data coming out of of the results of these two wells. So this Namibia is very active, and we're going to see two very much anticipated wells. I think that Namibia is also going to be the subject of additional corporate activity in the next few months, and additional independents and major companies like farming in into the main area of oil in Namibia, which is the Wallafis Basin, which we have four blocks in. And again, as I said, we have an abandonment of news coming out of Guyana in the next couple of months, with a new CPR, which we are busy putting together, with the delivery of last batch of data to Total and their decision in the next few months to farm into to exercise the option to farm into the block. In parallel to that, and this is the third reason, as you know, we have a strategic alliance agreement with Africa Oil, which is a substantial shareholder of ours, and we are always busy looking at additional opportunities in line with the eco strategy of coming in early into prospective oil basins, and we are quite busy identifying and analyzing few opportunities that we currently have on the table with Africa Oil. So again, we keep on very busy maturing our blocks to drilling stage, and we are keeping very busy adding additional opportunities to our portfolio in partnership with Africa Oil.
Marvelous stuff, Gil. Good to chat to you, and hopefully, like I said, a lot of news coming out, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Have a nice day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're all right, Al?
I'm very good, Just. How are you doing?
Yeah, I bet.
Sunny and hot down here.
I was going to say, the weather's in that microclimate down there where you perennially wear, you know, matching Hawaiian shorts and shirt. It must be blazing hot down there, isn't it, Al?
Do you know, Just, it's so hot, I'm just sitting here in my Speedos today and nothing else.
All right. That's what I like to hear, Al.
So I'll just leave you with that image for a second.
I can't picture anything else now. We can't go into stocks because that's just stuck in my head. It's burned to my brain.
Okay. See it into your memory cells, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what are we looking at stocks-wise?
Okay, right. Well, first of all, we're going to look at Petrofac, PFC. Petrofac is a great proxy for the oil industry, really because they are oil services suppliers, and they also have several exploration interests as well. So it's a very broad-based risk, if you like, if you're looking at the sector. But Petrofac were formerly a stock market darling, I guess you could say, a few years ago, and the shares were trading up sort of, £16-17. They came all the way back to £4 last year, and they've started to push higher again. One of the main reasons that the shares were hit was because there was the Italians, the chief executive Eamon Asfari was accused by the Italians of irregular dealing practices, and it's an accusation that he firmly refuted. Had full support of the board, but nonetheless that stuck and had an impact on the company. But subsequently, we've seen with trading updates, with results and everything else, that the company's trading firmly on track. And sure enough, today the company issued a trading statement. It's taken $1.8 billion worth of new orders in the first half of the year. The Sharecast also mentioned this morning that on the back of the ongoing Serious Fraud Office investigation due to this accusation, the market caps shrunk to $9.7 billion from the $10.2 billion at the end of December and $13 billion a year ago. So Eamon Asfari, the chief exec and the founder of the company, is still at the helm and says that the company's pushing forward. The companies are lining up to do business. They've got plenty of deals in the pipeline. They've got well-positioned on a number of bids. Tendering activity is high, and they've got about $20 billion worth of bid opportunities due for award in the second half of the year. So actually, the business of the company hasn't been affected. Clearly, the people the company are doing business with, which are most of the oil majors throughout the world, have looked at the company, looked at the issues, and don't believe it is an issue. And even if Asfari ultimately decides to step down, Petrofac as a business is an extremely strong investment proposition. It's well established. It's the go-to provider for oil services, and the company is going from strength to strength. I guess the one thing that might weigh on some investors' minds is the fact that net debt has grown to 0.9 billion from 0.6 billion at the end of last year, but the company says it's expected to decrease in the second half of the year. If you take a look at the chart for the company, the stock hit a high. It pushed as high as £6.60 a few months ago. It was about a month and a half ago, and it's come back to
£5.30.
Yeah, to 5.30, all around the December-January highs, which were the previous highs before the stock then fell off. So we're seeing a series of high lows here, which is quite encouraging. I think at the inflection point where the stock is now, on the basis of today's trading update and the general outlook going forward, I would expect the stock to bounce back quite strongly going forward. Added to which, as an investor, if you hold this stock, you get a 5.5% dividend yield too.
Lovely. That comes in with a bargain. It's in with a deal.
In with a deal, indeed.
You know, I'm looking at today, Al. It's been a strong rise of late, and your undying, unswerving sort of faith in this company has been relentless, and almost deluded.
But now, I can't imagine for a second what you're talking about.
Alan Andalas Green Energy, it's up 21%, and this is off similar rises in the last couple of weeks. It's going strong. And they announced, didn't they, a sort of speculation about, media speculation, about interest in Bunga Mas, which is in Indonesia. I thought they'd moving away from that to the North Sea, but looks like they're still having chats and talks in there, you know?
Well, again, if we look back at what's happened, under Dave Whitby, the company failed abjectly to deliver. But if you take a more pragmatic view of Andalas, the bigger picture is this: Simon Gorringe has taken over as CEO, and he's been very cautious in his outlook and what he says he's going to do. And so far, what he said he's going to do, he has delivered on, and that is, of course, the Badger prospect with Eagle Services in the North Sea. They bought a stake in the company, and both Simon and the chairman Robert Arnott have huge amounts of experience working in the North Sea. And again, in a similar way, I said this before, to i3 Energy, you've got a prospect which is adjacent to another working field, so it's very easy to bring that prospect online and dovetail or plug that in, if you can use such a simplistic analogy, to the infrastructure that's already there adjacent to it. So that's the North Sea element. Simon has also said in the past that the Indonesian projects, along with Pertamina, the gas to power projects, are still on the table. And he said, and I think this is an interesting statement, if we were, say, a large oil major like BP, and we had this project on the back burner, and we say delivered in 4 or 5 years' time, the market would love that because it would be yet more future visibility for the company. But of course, Andalas, really up to Simon took over and introduced the Badger prospect, was very much a one-trick pony. So it lived or died on the success and progress of the Indonesia projects. And of course, it died in its arse, and David Whitby didn't deliver, and so on. And we know all that. But I think investors can be moderately excited now about the prospects for Andalas because the Indonesia projects are still on the table. There is progress in regard to the potential purchase of interest in the Bunga Mas oil and gas asset, which is also in Indonesia. So, again, it just shows that the Indonesia projects are very much moving forward. But Simon's stated intention of getting involved in projects that were near-term revenue-generating and would produce meaningful progress in the shorter term, I think is... bugger mass is very much in that category. So it's going to be very interesting over the next little while. But I think also you can see with the share price movement over the past few weeks, I mean, the stock has rocketed up again today. A lot of movement, awful lot of volume. And there is, I believe the company is turning a corner, and we can see some very exciting developments in the near future. So clearly, Simon's been quite sort of high profile recently with several interviews and a podcast he did with us, of course, Brand Communications. But there's a lot to look at here. And I think anybody that just bought into the company when it was below 0.2p is sitting on a very, very healthy prospect indeed. But of course, do your own research.
That is your opinion, but it's always been your opinion.
It's always been my opinion, yes. But also,
regardless of the share price.
Yeah, regardless of the share price, yeah. But again, I think it's so easy to get carried away. And, you know, I've lost money on Andlers. You know, I really have. I've lost an awful lot of money. But I'm looking at what's happening in the company. I know the people involved. And I'm taking a view. And I think any sensible investor has to do that. You've got to spread your risk. And B, you've got to accept that you'll get losers as well as winners. And it doesn't mean to say there'll always be losers, but certainly I've taken a big hit on Andlers, and it's been a loser for me up to now. But I hope to recoup some of that loss in the future going forward. And certainly the projects that are on the table here give me good reason to believe that that will happen.
Yes. All right. Well, listen, you know, you've been a long-term holder. If you know, hopefully your faith will be rewarded, you know. And you may get, you know, this time in 5 years' time, you may get back to break even. You never know. You know, it could be that good, like that quick, or a return to fortune. You never know, Al.
It would be absolutely fantastic. If that happens, it'd be absolutely fantastic. So, but anyway, you know, it's the company's making progress. I think it's one to watch. And I think as a recovery play, you know, and also the board are absolutely committed to turning the situation around, because clearly, you know, they also have vested interests too. A lot of them have waived their salary, entitlements and taken shares. And so they're invested in the future of the company too. So, you know, from every aspect, it takes the boxes for me at the moment.
Okay, all right, lovely. And you mentioned you want to talk about a speedy hire as well. Is that one of the stocks you're talking about?
Indeed, yes, I do. This is VectorVest, my colleague David Paul at VectorVest, published a note on speedy hire, and this is going back a couple of weeks ago. Initially, there was a note from on speedy hire back in November, and the stock went on and hit the target that VectorVest had then, which was 64p, and that was hit during December. The stock has fallen back to since then. It's fallen back to just below 60p, and it's come back up to 63p. But speedy hire, obviously, I think most people know what the company does. It's a hire business, tool and equipment hire to construction, manufacturing, and industry. And on May the 16th, the full year results revealed a 60% hike in pre-tax, and revenues were up 6.5%. Also, net debt fell from 69 million to 69 million from 72 million, and that was after a 21 million acquisition spree as well. So the company's bought more businesses, debt has fallen, and also earnings per share rose during that period too. The dividend was increased by 65%, which is a real sign of confidence. And the board said they were delighted with the results. And the current year had got off to a very encouraging start, with revenue ahead of last year on a like-for-like basis. And that was, of course, back in May this year. VectorVest picked this up, and again, a lot of metrics on the VectorVest stock analysis platform indicated that the stock was going to push higher, and they have set a target price of 71 pence compared to the 61-62p the stock is trading at today. The fundamental target is 71-72p. The technical target is higher. Technical target from the double bottom that the stock formed on the chart recently is 75 pence. So when you've got a strong technical and fundamental validation of the stock, then I think you can expect to see some movement that way, given what the stock did previously over the next couple of months.
Marvellous stuff. Speedy High, SPD. Do your own research. Is that right?
SDY. SDY,
indeed. SDY, sorry. SPD, what are they thinking of there?
Yes, he will. And of course, at the moment, given this fantastic weather we're enjoying, and we're all sort of we're all sitting around in our skimpy underwear, all the building services will be going cock-a-hoop, and they'll be hiring equipment left, right, and centre to get all these jobs done that people have put off to the summer. So you know it's a seasonal factor there as well.
Lovely, marvellous stuff. Cool. Okay. Lovely. Al, anything else?
Also, I want to mention, and again, many investors won't be able to access this company online at the moment, but Apollo Minerals are an ASX-listed company, and we've spoken about them on several occasions. In fact, you have the CEO, the exec director, Hugo Schumann, on Vox Podcast a few weeks ago, talking about the Koufflens project and reopening the world's highest-grade tungsten mine in the south of France. Now, an announcement on ASX yesterday, the company have been given the go-ahead by the French government to take 100% ownership of the Koufflens project. And what's interesting about the mine is that there's also gold upside as well. There's gold has been found in the veins within the mine and in the adjacent Orinier mine, which is in Spain, which the company also has a stake in. But from the tungsten standpoint, tungsten prices are going up. In prior production years, the Salar mine produced an average head grade of tungsten of 1.5% compared to equivalent mines, other listed tungsten mining companies around the world, which are producing 0.2-0.3%. So the grade of tungsten, it's one of the highest grades in the world, and Apollo Minerals have now taken 100% ownership of it. Hugo Schumann has said the company expects to, as well as the ASX listing, expects to list in Europe UK on AIM at some point as well, on AIM or even possibly main market. We don't know yet, but that's going to that. My guess is that will happen sometime in the not too distant future. And given the progress and that announcement today, I think that's all the more likely. So, one to watch. There is a page on the Brand UK website, branduk.net, where you can read all about Apollo Minerals and the Koufflens tungsten project.
Marvellous stuff, Al. Good to chat to you, and I'll let you get back to your what do you use? Chip fat for the suntan cream, isn't it? For tanning up?
Chip fat or cocoa oil. That's right. Yes, I just sort of go into the local chippy and get a big vat of the fat and just lie in the back garden and stick it in a trough and just roll in it. So
yeah, I know you get your own brand of suntan cream there, or tanning sort of oil. Do you mix it with? What is it? Obviously, it's a secret formula, probably, is it?
It's a secret formula, but it's going to be marketed shortly. And it's called Chip Butty Tan. But I'll let you imagine what.
That's good. And that's why you managed to achieve that all year round tan, Al. So I'm very envious of that. Marvellous.
Well, the thing is, I've been influenced by Donald Trump and, his wonderful tan. I mean, no matter where he goes in the world, he has that sort of weeping tangoed look. So, I think he's inspired a lot of people with that look.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, lovely stuff. I can see you listing that product soon, Al. Why not?
Chip Buddy Tan?
Let's be honest. It's a lot worse being marketed and listed on AIM. So why not go for it? Lovely. Thanks, Al. And speak next week.
Thanks, Jess. Speak next week. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Marks & Spencer Group, that's MKS. Some big stocks amongst these today. At four, Sky, SKY. At three, Expedia, XPD. At two, Rio Tinto. RIO, of course, is the ticker there. It's Rio. And number one, most followed company, after Neil came on the podcast yesterday, Visarion, VRS. Okay. Top five most liked RNSs. At five, Codal Minerals, completion of 1.5 million fundraising. Quite annoying that they're developing that project there. It's lithium. So, and there's a report about mining today, mining.com, I think it is, but saying lithium demand will double by 2027, I think it was. I think it was more than that, actually. It was something ridiculous. But I did tweet that out. But yeah, it's worth looking at because they are developing their asset, their code remainers. KOD is the ticker there. And they've just raised $1.5 million, which means they're safe for another sort of year at least. They already had cash anyway, mainly raised through their Chinese cornerstone investor. And China are the biggest users of lithium and the fastest developers of EVs, electric vehicles. So they want to sort of secure the supply chain. And so this investor, this cornerstone investor from China, took 80% of their recent fundraise. So to me, that says it's going well. You know, the grades are looking good, and they will be coming out with a resource definition end of summer. All right, at four, new oil and gas statement from the chairman. At three, vast resources, result of meeting. At two, EVR Holdings, EVRH, of course, agreement with Big Machine Label Group and EU launch. And number one, most liked RNS came from Asia Met Resources, and that was appointment of director. That's it. In fact, the director there is very experienced in feasibility studies and all that. So you can see as they're advancing the project, they are bringing on board more people that are relevant to that part of the development. All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.